Chapter 9. Officers, which the trustees must settle, that they may be known. In consideration of this, every woman so subscribing obliges herself to pay, as often as any member of the society becomes a widow, the due proportion or share, allotted to her to pay towards the £500 for the said widow, provided her share does not exceed the sum of fives. No seamen's or soldiers' wives, to be accepted into such a proposal as this, on the account before mentioned, because the contingencies of their lives are not equal to others, unless they will admit this general exception, supposing they do not die out of the kingdom. It might also be an exception, that if the widow that claimed had really, bona fide, left her by her husband to her own use, clear of all debts and legacies, £2,000, she should have no claim, the intent being to aid the poor, not add to the rich. But there lie a great many objections against such an article, as, 1. It may tempt some to forswear themselves. 2. People will order their will so, as to defraud the exception. One exception must be made, and that is, either very unequal matches, as when a woman of 19 marries an old man of 70, or women who have infirm husbands, I mean, known and publicly so, to remedy which two things are to be done. 1. The office must have moving officers without doors, who shall inform themselves of such matters, and if any such circumstances appear, the office should have 14 days' time to return their money, and declare their subscriptions void. 2. No woman whose husband had any visible distemper should claim under a year after her subscription. One grand objection against this proposal is, how you will oblige people to pay either their subscription or their quarterage. To this I answer, by no compulsion, though that might be performed too, but altogether voluntary, only with this argument to move it, that if they do not continue their payments, they lose the benefit of their past contributions. I know it lies as a fair objection against such a project as this, that the number of claims are so uncertain, that nobody knows what they engage in when they subscribe, for so many may die annually out of 2,000 as may make my payment £20, or £25 per annum, and if a woman happen to pay that for 20 years, though she receives the £500 at last, she is a great loser. But if she dies before her husband, she has lessened his estate considerably, and brought a great loss upon him. First, I say to this, that I would have such a proposal as this be so fair and so easy, that if any person who had subscribed found the payments too high, and the claims fall too often, it should be at their liberty at any time, upon notice given, to be released, and stand obliged no longer. And, if so, volenti non fit injuria. Everyone knows best what their own circumstances will bear. In the next place, because death is a contingency no man can directly calculate, and all that subscribe must take the hazard, yet that a prejudice against this notion may not be built on wrong grounds, let us examine a little the probable hazard, and see how many shall die annually out of 2,000 subscribers, accounting by the common proportion of burials to the number of the living. Sir William Petty, in his Political Arithmetic, by a very ingenious calculation, brings the account of burials in London to be 1 in 40 annually, and proves it by all the proper rules of proportion computation, and I will take my scheme from thence. If, then, 1 in 40 of all the people in England die, that supposes 50 to die every year out of our 2,000 subscribers, and for a woman to contribute fives to everyone, would certainly be to agree to pay £12.10 per annum upon her husband's life, to receive £500 when he died, and lose it if she died first, and yet this would not be a hazard beyond reason too great for the gain. But I shall offer some reasons to prove this to be impossible in our case. First, Sir William Petty allows the City of London, to contain about 1 million of people, and our yearly bill of mortality never yet amounted to 25,000 in the most sickly years we have had, plague years excepted, sometimes but to 20,000, which is but 1 in 50. Now it is to be considered here that children and ancient people make up, one time with another, at least 1/3 of our bills of mortality, and our assurances lie upon none, but the middling age of the people, which is the only age wherein life is anything steady, and if that be allowed, there cannot die by his computation above 1 in 80 of such people every year. But because I would be sure to leave room for casualty, I will allow 1 in 50 shall die out of our number subscribed. Secondly, it must be allowed that our payments falling due only on the death of husbands, this 1 in 50 must not be reckoned upon the 2,000, for it is to be supposed at least as many women shall die as men, and then there is nothing to pay. So that 1 in 50 upon 1,000 is the most, that I can suppose, shall claim the contribution in a year, which is 20 claims a year at 5s, each, and is £5 per annum. And if a woman pays this for 20 years, and claims at last, she is gainer enough, and no extraordinary loser, if she never claims at all. And I verily believe any office might undertake to demand at all adventures, not above £6 per annum, and secure the subscriber £500 in case she come to claim as a widow. I forbear being more particular on this thought, having occasion to be larger in other prints, the experiment being resolved upon by some friends who are pleased to think this too useful a project, not to be put in execution, and therefore I refer the reader to the public practice of it. I have named these two cases as special experiments, of what might be done by assurances in way of friendly society, and I believe I might, without arrogance, affirm that the same thought might be improved in two methods, that should prevent the general misery and poverty of mankind, and at once secure us against beggars, parish poor, almshouses, and hospitals, and by which not a creature so miserable, or so poor, but should claim subsistence as their due, and not ask it of charity. I cannot believe any creature so wretchedly base, as to beg of mere choice, but either it must proceed from want or sordid prodigious covetousness, and thence I affirm there can be no beggar, but he ought to be either relieved or punished, or both. If a man begs for more covetousness without want, it is a baseness of soul so extremely sordid as ought to be used with the utmost contempt, and punished with the correction due to a dog. If he begs for want, that want is procured by slothfulness and idleness, or by accident. If the latter, he ought to be relieved. If the former, he ought to be punished for the cause, but at the same time relieved also, for no man ought to starve, let his crime be what it will. I shall proceed, therefore, to a scheme by which all mankind, be he never so mean, so poor, so unable, shall gain for himself a just claim to a comfortable subsistence whosoever age or casualty shall reduce him to a necessity of making use of it. There is a poverty so far from being despicable, that it is honorable, when a man by direct casualty, sudden providence, and without any procuring of his own, is reduced to want relief from others, as by fire, shipwreck, loss of limbs, and the like. These are sometimes so apparent, that they command the charity of others, but there are also many families reduced to decay whose conditions are not so public, and yet their necessities as great. Innumerable circumstances reduce men to want, and pressing poverty obliges some people, to make their cases public, or starve, and from thence came the custom of begging, which sloth and idleness has improved into a trade. But the method I propose, thoroughly put in practice, would remove the cause, and the effect would cease of course. Want of consideration is the great reason why people do not provide in their youth and strength for old age and sickness. And the ensuing proposal is, in short, only this, that all persons in the time of their health and youth, while they are able to work and spare it, should lay up some small inconsiderable part of their gettings as a deposit in safe hands, to lie as a store and bank to relieve them, if by age or accident they come to be disabled, or incapable to provide for themselves, and that if God so bless them, that they nor theirs never come to need it, the overplus may be employed to relieve such as shall. If an office in the same nature with this were appointed in every county in England, I doubt not, but poverty might easily be prevented, and begging wholly suppressed. The proposal is for a pension office. That an office be erected in some convenient place, where shall be a secretary, a clerk, and a searcher, always attending. That all sorts of people who are laboring people, and of honest repute, of what calling or condition soever, men or women, beggars and soldiers excepted, who, being sound of their limbs, and under 50 years of age, shall come to the said office and enter their names, trades, and places of abode into a register, to be kept for that purpose, and shall pay down at the time of the said entering the sum of 6 pence, and from thence 1 shilling per quarter, shall every one have an assurance under the seal of the said office for these following conditions. 1. Every such subscriber, if by any casualty, drunkenness and quarrels excepted, they break their limbs, dislocate joints, or are dangerously maimed or bruised, able surgeons appointed for that purpose shall take them into their care, and endeavor their cure gratis. 2. If they are at any time dangerously sick, on notice given to the said office, able physicians shall be appointed to visit them, and give their prescriptions gratis. 3. If by sickness or accident, as aforesaid, they lose their limbs or eyes, so as to be visibly disabled to work, and are otherwise poor, and unable to provide for themselves, they shall either be cured at the charge of the office, or be allowed a pension for subsistence during life. 4. If they become lame, aged, bedridden, or by real infirmity of body are unable to work, and otherwise incapable to provide for themselves, on proof made, that it is really and honestly, so they shall be taken into a college or hospital provided for that purpose, and be decently maintained during life. 5. If they are seamen, and die abroad on board the merchant's ships they were employed in, or are cast away and drowned, or taken and die in slavery, their widows shall receive a pension during their widowhood. 6. If they were tradesmen, and paid the parish rates, if by decay and failure of trade they break, and are put in prison for debt, they shall receive a pension for subsistence during close imprisonment. 7. If by sickness or accidents they are reduced to extremities of poverty for a season, on a true representation to the office they shall be relieved as the governors shall see cause. It is to be noted, that in the 4th article such as by sickness and age are disabled from work, and poor, shall be taken into the house and provided for, whereas in the 3rd article they who are blind, or have lost limbs, and see shall have pensions allowed them. The reason of this difference is this. A poor man or woman, that has lost his hand, or leg, or sight, is visibly disabled, and we cannot be deceived, whereas other infirmities are not so easily judged of, and everybody would be claiming a pension, when but few will demand being taken into a hospital, but such as are really in want. And that this might be managed with such care and candor as a design which carries so good a face ought to be, I propose the following method for putting it into practice. I suppose every undertaking of such a magnitude must have some principal agent to push it forward, who must manage and direct everything, always with direction of the governors. And first I will suppose one general office erected for the great parishes of Stepney and Whitechapel. And as I shall lay down afterwards some methods, to oblige all people, to come in and subscribe, so I may be allowed to suppose here that all the inhabitants of those 2 large parishes, the meaner laboring sort, I mean, should enter their names, and that the number of them should be 100,000 as I believe they would be at least. First, there should be named 50 of the principal inhabitants of the said parishes, of which the church wardens for the time being, and all the justices of the peace dwelling in the bounds of the said parish, and the ministers resident for the time being, to be part, to be governors of the said office. The said 50 to be first nominated by the Lord Mayor of London for the time being, and every vacancy to be supplied in 10 days at farthest by the majority of voices of the rest. The 50 to choose a committee of 11, to sit twice a week, of whom 3 to be a quorum, with a chief governor, a deputy governor, and a treasurer. In the office, a secretary with clerks of his own, a registrar and 2 clerks, 4 searchers, a messenger, 1 in daily attendance under salary, a physician, a surgeon, and 4 visitors. In the hospital, more or less according to the number of people entertained, a housekeeper, a steward, nurses, a porter, and a chaplain. For the support of this office, and that the deposit money might go to none, but the persons and uses for whom it is paid, and that it might not be said officers and salaries was the chief end of the undertaking, as in many a project it has been, I propose that the manager or undertaker, whom I mentioned before, be the secretary, who shall have a clerk allowed him, whose business it shall be, to keep the register, take the entries, and give out the tickets sealed by the governors and signed by himself, and to enter always the payment of quarterage of every subscriber, and that there may be no fraud or connivance, and to great trust be not reposed in the said secretary, every subscriber who brings his quarterages to put it into a great chest, locked up with 11 locks, every member of the committee to keep a key, so that it cannot be opened, but in the presence of them all, and every time a subscriber pays his quarterage, the secretary shall give him a sealed ticket thus, Christmas 96, which shall be allowed as the receipt of quarterage for that quarter. Note. The reason why every subscriber shall take a receipt, or ticket for his quarterage is because this must be the standing law of the office, that if any subscribers fail to pay their quarterage, they shall never claim after it until double, so much be paid, nor not at all that quarter, whatever befalls them. The secretary should be allowed to have 2d for every ticket of entry he gives out, and ld for every receipt he gives for quarterage, to be accounted for as follows. 1/3 to himself in lieu of salary, he being to pay 3 clerks out of it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.